Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by Julie D. Kirchner-Updike of Purdue University. The session is entitled, A Collaborative Enterprise Approach to Efficient and Cost-Effective Desktop Management.
I want to welcome you to the session, A Collaborative Enterprise Approach to Efficient and Cost-Effective Desktop Management. Just a few brief announcements before I introduce the speaker this morning. It's important that you fill out the session evaluation. Those evaluations are available from the link on the kiosk main page anytime after the session, or from the link on the conference program page at your convenience. And just to let you know, I've actually filled a couple of these surveys out. They're literally two questions and a fill in the blank. It's real quick to do, and it's very important to give feedback to the speaker and the speaker's team. This morning, I would like to introduce to you Julie D. Kirchner-Updike. She's the Associate Vice President for Customer Relations in Information Technology at Purdue University at West Lafayette, Indiana. I'm sure that they're enjoying our fabulous beach weather down here today. I'm actually up here from Miami, Florida, and this is about as winter gets here in Florida. So without further ado, let me introduce to you Julie Kirchner-Updike.
Thank you. Well, we'll start out this morning with a question. How many of you stayed in your rooms last night, rested, planned out what you were going to do for today? Okay, well, it's the first thing. You're either all asleep or you went out and partied last night. So I got a job ahead of me this morning. The first thing that I want to do then is try and get a feel for who's actually in the room. So how many of you in here manage a IT organization, desktop support organization? Okay, good. Everybody pretty much in the room. How many of you would you say are, you consider yourself being part of the central organization? And how many would say you're part of a distributed organization? Okay, so primarily central organization. Well, I want to tell you that one of the things that we did in this project was we really tried to keep an even balance between participation from central organization people and distributed. What we're going to talk about this morning and what I'm going to share with you is an approach more than anything, more than desktop. It's more that how we did this because we do have a very large distributed organization of IT folks. Actually, distributed IT represents more people than our centralized IT do. And so we tried to keep it really balanced. And by that, we have representation from my team. This was very much a team effort. And so the front row up here represents a team of people that were on the project, actually leaders on the project. And each of them represent either administration of the project, represents a distributed academic area, represents central IT, or represents a distributed administrative IT support area. So this is all about our collaboration and how we did this. And the reason that I wanted to share it with you this morning is because I've worked for Purdue for 21 years, and I have never seen a project like this before. I've never seen people come together and stay together before. So that's why I wanted to share it this morning. So I want to tell you a little bit about Purdue. We're in Indiana, the other Indiana University. We have four campuses, and this project was done on the central West Lafayette campus, and we have three regional campuses, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we're a land-grant university. There are more than 15,000 faculty and staff. There are more than 39,000 students on the West Lafayette campus. 22 of our alumni have been chosen for space travel, including the first and the last men on the moon. In 1962, we had the first university in the nation to establish a computer science program. And I graduated from the computer science program, so that means something to me. We have more than 1,000 IT staff on our campus, and that does include the regional campuses, so a lot of IT people. But less than half of them are in the central organization. It's close to a 50-50 split, but there are actually more in the distributed IT areas. And that represents more than 33 different distributed IT organizations on the West Lafayette campus alone. So that should give you an idea, and it's probably very much like all of your schools, that there's a lot of diversity out there. And so that's one of the things that I think was part of our challenge, and that's what I wanted to talk about today, how we overcame that challenge. Why this project got started. There was, in our enterprise applications group, there was two people who shared a cubicle, and one of the people was on vacation, and the other one was in their shared cubicle. And all of a sudden, the person was there, and she thought, did I see something on that other person's desktop? I must be going crazy. She looked. Well, sure enough, the cursor was moving, but nobody was sitting there. Well, that was in 2005, and she turned it in to security. They came in, took the computer. Sure enough, it had been hacked. And the really compromising thing was that there were an old test file. Nobody knew that old test file was sitting there. There were 15,000 faculty and staff names and social securities in the file. Now, whether that person, and I think it was in Germany, whether that person in Germany actually saw that file, got a hold of that old test file, we still don't know. But it certainly was there for the taking. They certainly had an opportunity to get a whole lot of Social Security numbers. How many of you have been involved in your school in a breach like this? I mean, I'm sharing openly that this happened. So a number of you have had this experience. I was working for the CIO at the time, and he asked me to take over the communications and managing this whole mess that we were in. And so I got a firsthand experience of, you know, some very scared, angry, upset people a lot, who took personal phone calls from these people. And I heard people telling me that, well, I've already been through identity theft before. And now I'm really concerned. So this was going to be, if something happened, you know, sometimes second and third in one case, people's experience with identity theft. The worst thing about all this was that the programmer had downloaded a piece of software on their machine. They had administrative rights. It was a program that they needed to do their job, but they hadn't asked anybody else to load it for them. They hadn't kept it patched. And there was a known vulnerability on that. This could have been prevented so easily if that piece of software had been patched. But nobody even knew that piece of software was sitting there. So that was a lost opportunity. And so because of that, that's what really started this project. It was, for me, I was working for the CIO, I took over a position where I was the desktop support area was reporting to me. And so as my central desktop person, they managed about 1,500 computers. And I had done desktop support years ago, 10, 15 years ago. And when I came back into this organization, they were managing things exactly like we did 15 years before. No tools, no inventory, you know, sorry, but by the seat of our pants. And so one of the things then we did was we used this as an opportunity. The whole thing about the project that I think is most interesting was it was all about the strategies, the way we put this thing together, the strategies we used, and being very transparent. We felt that was going to be very important. We had a window of opportunity, and we needed to walk through it. We had the president of Purdue at the time, Martin Jiske, called all these IT, distributed IT, all the IT people, the leaders, into a room and said, I want to know who's responsible for managing these computers. And not a single person in the room raised their hand. And why not? Because everybody in the room was managing desktop computers. So we had some pain going on because that led to, well, we are going to manage these and we're going to manage them well. So we had some shared pain. Everybody needed to do something because now we had campus accountability to the campus. And then also something interesting happened in the state of Indiana at the time, and that was this individual accountability. If you have social security numbers found on your desktop, you could actually be held accountable as at the individual level. So that had everybody scared. Of course, nobody had any money. And one of the things that you're going to see up here are these two little or people with these little light bulbs, and that represents the strategy. So the strategy here was use the window of opportunity, use the fact that everybody's hurting, and let's put something together to fix that. What we said we needed to do, and part of the strategy is to put a no-brainer idea out there that let's figure out a way to put common management tools in people's hands at no additional cost. We thought that maybe if we could get volume pricing and get the price down enough, maybe we could pay for the tool. But we wanted it to be completely transparent, and we wanted it to be cooperative efforts. We wanted everybody to own it, not just the IT organization. So people would really ask themselves, why wouldn't I want to do this? And so we kind of thought of that as our field of dreams. And there were a lot of people who were very skeptical and thought we were dreamers. But they wanted to stick around and see, well, maybe they've got something. You know, it's not going to cost me anything but a little time. So I'll stick with it and see if what they're doing is going to pan out for me. So we continued on with the concept, and this was just a very small, Gary and I spent lots of hours together, and that's my central IT person, spent lots of hours coming up with this concept. And the concept was that, see if my pointer works here. Yeah, it's hard to see, but this bottom level down here, this bottom level is, it's a tiered approach that says the bottom level means that 80% of our computers on this campus are the same. They all are running Windows, they're all running Microsoft Office, and they're all running Acrobat, and they're all running the same kind of thing. So why not use that and create a baseline configuration for both hardware and software and figure out a consistent management process for that baseline configuration? Because we knew that if we went out there and tried to say Central IT is going to manage all your computers, we would be booted right out the door. So we wanted to come up with this approach that said, you know, let's share the management of the machines. We're at a place now within the industry that's doable. And so let's come up with this approach that everybody's got the same baseline, so we can patch the same base, we can patch them all the same, and that's what our model was built on, the whole concept. And then we thought, then there's this middle layer of things that not everybody has. There are things like maybe it's our SAP GUI, maybe it's Microsoft Project Visio, things that we don't put on every desktop, but they're on a bunch of desktops across the campus. Let's make that a shared environment, and let's get different people around campus to take ownership by product, package the thing up, and then we'll use that in a push on top of this baseline configuration, and it should work because everybody's baseline's the same. So that's kind of our middle tier. And then what we promoted this to be able, or our concept was, that will give people more time to focus on the things that really are differentiators for their departments. Because we don't need to be doing baseline patching and configuration 33 different ways on this campus, and that's what we were doing. And so that was the concept, and that was the idea. So we held this, and I put my picture up here embedded in this thing, but we put this some campus-wide vendor presentations together. So first thing let's show them what can be done. Let's just get people in a room. And we had hundreds of people come to these presentations, and they would... But it was just about what are the possibilities. But what we did on the side was we listened. We listened to the questions, we listened to the concerns, and we picked up on those things. And that was another strategy. Figure out what's important to them. So when you got in a room and they were saying, well, does your tool support multiple ADs, then we knew that we needed to be thinking about that concern, that Active Directory multiple ADs are important, that we support that. So we use those things as strategies. So how we got started, I talked about this, a lot of brainstorming between a couple of people to put the concept together, but then shortly after that, we went out and searched for a partner for success. And we got our director of Ag IT, who's with us today on the academic side, who has a very well-managed IT organization, well-managed desktops, even does some leasing and outsourcing of his desktops. So we went out and we started talking to him. Plus the fact that, you know, Gary and I had been at the university, both of us have been there for more than 20 years, and so we knew who the players were. And we knew who the ones that we thought would be receptive and open and want to work together to make something better. And Pat was one of those. And then the other person we went out and we got was from the College of Education, and they were more, you know, the have-not kind of people in the College of Education, and they have two people who are trying to support all their desktops all over campus. So we knew he was really in pain, so we brought him in. And then we brought in an administrative partner, an administrative IT support. And with that, we started to develop a very small team of people, which eventually grew to about 12, that were working on this whole idea to make it happen. So we created a vision, and our vision was pretty simple. We want a secure computing environment that's managed and administrated in with some kind of a balance, because we knew that there was efficiencies for the central part to centralize some of it, but we knew that there was a lot of effectiveness by keeping it decentralized. So that was the whole premise. The vision was strike that balance, build it, and they will come. And that's what we did. So our goals, and I'm not going to talk through this whole slide, but our goals and strategies were built on this, the 80% rule, and that was a strategy that I was surprised. That helped us so much throughout this project, because someone would say, well, that's not going to work for me because Professor X is going to do Y. And the answer was, well, no problem, because that's not part of the 80%. That's not what we're talking about. And so we really used that 80%, and that helped us keep people focused on the big picture. And don't worry about the other. You can manage them the same way you're managing today, and then you're going to have 80% of your environment managed like centrally or with this group concept, and you can do the other 20%. However, that helped a lot. The other thing that helped was they had a consultant come in and do a study, a penetration test, and the penetration test showed we still have vulnerabilities. The interesting thing was about the same time, in fact, before the consultant brought in their results, we had already been putting this whole thing. The vision had been there. The goals had been set. What did the consultant come back and say? You need to do configuration management. What did they say? You need to be doing patch management. You need to be doing asset management. And so we were already well a step ahead of this, what the consultants were telling us to do. We wanted to leverage existing security tools, and we were going to build that into this and have a reliable environment where they could store their data. So we're going to talk more about the standardized collaborative efforts, but you can read our goals. I'll put this presentation up shortly after, or probably tomorrow or tonight. The benefits to Purdue. We talked a lot about the benefits, and one of the benefits was this cost savings through system-wide coordination of hardware and software patches. We really believed, and that's what we told people, would you do this if it didn't cost you any money? And what we really, well, sure, but we don't believe you. We don't believe you're going to make that happen. I mean, you know, naysayers, okay, we'll listen, we'll play along, we'll see what happens. And so we knew that we had to have a certain price. We costed this thing out, knew we had to have a price, and we knew we had to get the volume pricing on the machines, because probably on your campus, you've got people ordering machines, you know, one here, one there. So we were talking about volume purchasing in hope that it would lower the cost enough to pay for this program so nobody would have to pay any new money. We also saw some benefits in licensing and savings in licensing, because we didn't really know, we still don't, we're not to that point in the project yet, of who's really using what and how often they're using it. So we believe that there's more advantage, and that's in our model, but we haven't quite gotten that. License compliance, do we really have people who are using license they legally have rights to? And then we believe we could have this leveraging of expenditures for the software. So those are the benefits we saw to Purdue. And then enhancing the IT support, whether it was central or distributed. I had as much of a problem in the central organization as the distributed organizations could do. And so these are the things that we were looking for: desktop monitoring tools and reporting, troubleshooting tools, application software deployment. Same thing that, you know, probably a lot of you have in place today. But the project wasn't, what I'm talking about today isn't as much about these what we did as much as it is how we did it. There were benefits to the vendor, so we believed. We believed that having a single vendor who had a multi-year relationship with the university, who was a strong partner for the university, could help us, and they could help us streamline our approach to doing things. We thought that it was a benefit to them to be associated with a very successful program. And our Dell rep was supposed to be here today, and unfortunately she couldn't make it, but Dell did get this contract in the partnership. So how we made it happen: you're not supposed to be able to read this slide, this is back to conceptual, but I did want to use this. It's back to strategy, and back to a strategy of a small group of people. So we said, how are people going to really believe us and trust us and buy into this? And the way we did it was, we said, well, we're going to put a team of people together. And if this looks huge, it was. There were more than 60 people involved in this project. Another thing that people say, they're never going to make this happen. And so we said, well, knowing that up front, thinking about that, using it to our advantage, I said, well, how can we make people feel involved? So we created a steering committee. And the steering committee was made up of 12 members. And I'm the sponsor to this program. So 12-member team. Four of those people were going to be from academic IT leads, the distributed academic group. Four of them were going to be from administrative IT leadership, and the other four would be central. That was key. Equal parts. And so everybody felt like it was, you know, they were represented. Then we put this project together in four different parts, and it was like the umbrella project was smart computing, and then the four pieces across was, we knew we needed a group to look at system management tools to pick our tool. We needed a group to figure out hardware management over on the right and what our requirements would be for a baseline machine. At the time, we thought we'd have one baseline machine. We ended up with multiple, more of a flexible approach, but it's still very small. We don't have a, you know, pick anything you want in any way you want it, because that's, you know, that's not in benefit to our vendor. So keeping it small, that's a benefit to the vendor. We had a team that worked on the cost model, and we had a team that worked on communications and marketing. Each one of those teams had a lead from, there were three co-leads. Guess what they were made up of? One from administrative, one from academic, and one from central. So there were three co-leads to each one of these projects. And then, and this was the team effort, the team decision, the team said, well, now let's make sure we have at least one person from every one of those 33 IT organizations on one of these four projects. At least one person. That way, part of the strategy again, that way was get people, have one point person, somebody in a department who knew what we were doing. And so it was like they can take information back, and if somebody asks, well, what's that smart computing thing all about? They've got somebody who's been involved, and so somebody who can hopefully answer their questions or get them to know who it was that who they could talk to about it. So it's not so important that, you know, the hardware requisition team, they did the RFP, systems management team, they did an RFP for the tool. Those things, that was what they were out there, that was their purpose. And then we had small group meetings, and then they would report back up to the smart computing advisory group. The smart computing advisory group worked well together. They were a group of people, and we did this again on purpose. We picked people who we thought not were the easy personalities by any means, but we had some who were easy personalities, some who were very, I don't want to do this, this is not, you know, this is, we had naysayers on there, so I don't want to give the impression that this was, you know, one big happy family, but they worked together like a happy family. And I think that that's always interesting in a team environment. I think that when you work with people, it's kind of like, if it's nice if you can be able to work as a family, and you know, you can say something bad to your brother one day, but that, you know, when you walk away, you still love your brother. And so things are, you know, that's the way that I wanted this team to work. You could say whatever you needed to say in the room, but when we walked out, we all needed to remember that we liked each other. And so that really helped. And I tried to be that figure that kept reminding people we like each other. And so sometimes we had a very democratic process. Sometimes we'd go around the room and we would vote. It was amazing when we did the software RFP. We went around the room and voted, and 11 people all voted for the same thing. I mean, there was only one person that voted for a different vendor. So it was a very interesting process, and it was very rewarding. It was very fun, too. We tried to make it fun. So the deliverables, I put cross-campus collaboration as being one of our deliverables. Obviously, systems management tool was, and we ended up picking SCCM. Primarily, we went with SCCM because it had a presence on campus in multiple organizations, so I think people were comfortable. It was SMS in the beginning, and now we've just recently pulled it into SCCM. We were able to create that baseline configuration for 80%, which that was a remarkable. Even more remarkable was coming up with the baseline software configuration. To get 33 areas to agree on this is what's going to be in there, that took time, but that worked. They finally came up with it. I was thankful for that. We have our vendor partnership established. As I said, Dell won that contract, and our Dell representative couldn't be better. She works with us on a weekly, if not sometimes a daily basis, to help us make this project a success. So that's my plug for Dell, but it's really, our rep is just wonderful, and they've done great things for us. We've created a website. We have a marketing plan, how we're going to go out and sell this. I've gone out and talked to deans. I've talked to deans and their associate deans. We've talked to, you know, we really went out and we sold this thing to people. Back, think about, why wouldn't you want to do this? Because the key was, when the vendor did their RFP, they actually came in with pricing that did exactly what we said we wanted to do in the beginning. We wanted to lower the price of a machine enough to pay for the program. So lo and behold, it wasn't going to cost anything. And that was amazing. So that was a big win for us when that happened. That was a huge, huge win. I can't downplay that one. So it gave the team some credibility. Oh, well, maybe your ideas are reasonable. Maybe they'll work. We established a governance model and a cost model. And here is the governance model. I'm just going to have to say I'll never forget a meeting where I just had to sit back and swallow hard. And that was something that it was very difficult for me when they came up with the governance model. And the reason it was difficult will be because you see that the sponsoring head of this, which is me in this case, the smart computing program does not actually report to me forever. It is the program manager reports into me, but the governance structure for smart computing, this executive oversight committee that's been established, we have an executive oversight to deal with processes and procedures. We have a technical steering committee that deals with all the technical stuff, and then we have some technical subcommittees that we pull together as we need them. But that group of people report in to the program manager, but they wanted this caveat in it, and the caveat was, okay, it's going to report into central IT for now. But at any time, we can move it. And I think that that's one of the biggest strategies and things of this project. As I said early on, the first time, one of the few times I was in front of the room was those initial vendor presentations. And after that, I really made it a point to not be in front of the room, to not make this an ITAP central project, and that's another key success factor. This truly was a project that was being delivered by the Smart Computing Executive Oversight Committee. This was a committee approach. This was not ownership by IT, central IT. This was a group project. And so when we do a presentation, when we would have people come together to tell them about this program, or have the vendors come in when we were doing this. I would purposefully ask somebody else on that 12-person committee to do the introductions and make sure you say, this is not a central IT program, because I'll say too, admittedly, that our central IT organizations in some instances did not have the greatest reputation. And so I didn't, if we went out and said, this is an IT project, this is centralized, you're going to put in people's minds that this is, they want to come in, they want to take us over. And that wasn't what this was all about. So what better way to do it than to have somebody else from the distributed IT area stand up and say, this is not an IT project, an ITAP project. This is not a central project. This is a group project that we're trying to do at the university level. So you can see, after sponsoring it, I was kind of crushed when they said, you know, we want the right to move this at any time. And so I just said, you know, okay, that's fine. That's fine. I had to give some things and give up some things, because this is kind of, you know, I feel very passionate about what this whole project has been. But that was okay. And it's working fine. And I sometimes ask if anybody'd like to take it over, but nobody ever seems to want to, so that's okay. This is our organizational structure today. We found that, as I talked about already, we have this technical steering committee, we have this infrastructure committee, we've hired a systems administrator, there's a dedicated program manager, which we are just now hiring, and we have a clerical person who at first we thought we'd be able to get by with a half-time clerical person. We're putting more clerical effort into this than we thought we were going to, because now, instead of each individual department doing their purchase orders, now we have centralized that piece. Everybody's really happy about that too. It's working very well. Our financial model, we made some assumptions in the very beginning. We said we hoped to have 5,000 computers in this program within, and we were looking at a 4-year life cycle. So 1,250 machines in the program per year would pay for the program and its ongoing cost. If people roll back in the money for savings, then this would pay for the program. So 5,000 machines being in there over a 4-year life cycle. And then the cost savings would come from this. We also, in the assumption, said that an identical machine, if purchased outside our program, was going to be above the smart computing price. Because anybody could get this machine at the cost we were getting, then it's an advantage to the university, yes, but our program's going to go down the tubes, because then we don't have enough money for the program cost. So our Dell rep's done a real good job of keeping those things different. Now, the comptroller initially had a little problem with this. Why are we selling computers to some people for this price, and we're selling the same computers to this group for another price? And so we did a lot of talking with the comptroller to help him understand that there really is more cost that's being incurred with those program costs to get this price down to that level. If the program goes away, and your program costs, you don't pay for the get to program costs in there, if that goes away, then your computer price for everybody goes back up to what it was. And so because we could help them understand that that's where our cost saving was, because we were doing all this work in the background and we were working with the vendor, that's how we got the university to agree to this costing model. We also had some non-recurring money that we got the CIO to pitch in, because he thought this was a good thing. We also had executives, I should mention the executive sponsors for the program was our CIO and our internal auditor. She was also a champion. She was a champion because she knew we had a lot of risk with this environment that we had. And so she was our other, that was the other person I should have mentioned. We started false start. We had three scenarios that people were going to could use for their recharge model. They could buy a computer, because we had all this issue with legacy machines, right? That's great. You can put all your new computers in and pay for the program cost, but how are you going to pay for the program cost for those legacy machines that you got out there? If you're only going to replace 25% of your machines a year, you know, the first year you still got 75% of your machines that you don't have in this model. So what our cost model was really complicated. But if you bought a machine and you put all the money, your savings, into the program, then you could put, that would pay for 4 years of that machine, right? Or you could pay pay the money up front. You could pay for that machine, and then you could put in three legacy machines. So in essence, you could get all your machines in by replacing 25% of your machines every year and putting that money back into the program. We thought that sounded good. And then we had some people come back, well, we're not going to replace 25% of our machines. We've got grad students who we trickle down machines that are 7 years old now. What are we going to do with those? And so we redesigned our cost model. And now we recognize that all the money is really getting a computer in the door and then getting that computer put on the network. So it's kind of like a tax. And we have said that because these costs are up front, just pay your fees, and as long as you're buying 80% of your new purchases through our program, so you're really committed to the program, as long as you're committed to our program, we'll let you put all your legacy machines in free. And that's because if you think about the model, baseline configuration, we've got this distributed support infrastructure. The distributed IT folks in the central, the people, they were going to be doing the work for the legacy machines. That's where the work to get them on. So we really wanted to find a way to make this work. So we worked, that steering committee worked together to find a way, and this is what they came up with. And that's new to this year. We're just starting that. But boy, when we told people that, there was a lot of excitement. And then there were some areas that said, you know, I get a lot of my machines donated, and I can't really, you know, I'm not going to realize that savings. How am I going to pay? And so for those people, we said, okay, you pay the program cost up front, and we'll let you in, and you do that on your 100% of your new machines, and then we'll let you in for all your legacy machines. You can bring all of your legacy machines. And that worked really well. We do have a website, and that's how people can do purchasing. You can see the configuration if you go to the website, but people can go there, they can do their ordering, they can do their support. So we've automated a lot of things that weren't automated, complete paper process before. So we've automated a lot of things, which is saving us. And then our timeline, and I put the little snail up there with the smiley face because this was a very long. From the time we had the incident in 2005, the project started up in 2006, around the first of the year. So this project has gone on for almost 2 years. And I was really, all the way along, I thought, you know, we're going to lose them. But then something would happen, you know, a big win would come along, like the pricing, when we, you know, when what we thought would happen did happen, we'd get that. So there was a lot of wins through this. It was just amazing to me that people would come to the table and stay at the table for this long a period. So I knew that we were onto something, and that part of it was really exciting to see. Nobody left. Everybody stayed in. And these are all the people who are now involved. You're not supposed to be able to read it. But just to give you an idea, these are all the people that are buying through the program and are associated with the program now. We have over 2,000 desktops that have been purchased in the program. So we are well above what our 1,250 estimate was. We're now looking at, we now think that we'll probably be able to hit 10,000 machines, new purchases through this program, which is double, which is amazing. The even bigger thing is we've saved the university by that. We have saved the university over $500,000. And $350,000 of it has gone to program cost. But even with that said, remember in the beginning, we said, you want to do this, if you could do this, and it wouldn't cost you anything. Well, now we're doing it. We have common tools in people's hands. We're providing people training on the common tool set. We're doing it, and they're actually getting money back. So that's been a huge win for this project as well. You know, the bottom line is we've developed this cost-efficient approach to IT provisioning, that we have common standards in place for security. We have this unbelievable amount of increase in collaboration and resource sharing now is starting in other ways. It's done a lot of things for us that we didn't even realize. There's a new level of trust and confidence In IT in general, these working relationships that have come out of this program are just unbelievable to me. We have people coming to us now at the campus and saying, I'm starting up this project. Can you tell us how you did smart computing, the approach? So in the beginning, another strategy of ours was smart computing, although it has an acronym for something that I never remember. There's a reason I don't remember it. And the reason I don't remember it is because we didn't ever say smart desktop computing. We said smart computing. And it was really, in the very beginning, my belief that you could do computing in a smart way across the campus, and this approach was it. So this was all about smart computing to me can be now smart computing in, you know, whatever the next thing, teaching Microsoft Office, smart computing in, consolidating your server rooms. There's so many opportunities. So that's really, to me, what smart computing is all about. The next things that we think we're going to do is expand our services to get into the Macs. We started with Windows, again, another strategy. Start with Windows because it's easy. I say it's easy, but it's easier. And it's the bulk. It's what most people are concerned about. It's easier to get that baseline for the Windows environment. But now we're looking at expanding it out to the Mac environment and Linux. And then we want to get into that whole software management piece, including departments taking ownership of a particular package and being able to deploy that and share that ownership, watch out for the patches on that. We look forward to being able to expand our services to those things. And then more training. We've got a little extra money, so we're going to put that into training. And the group decides, what do we do? We're very transparent throughout this thing. What do? We have an extra, I don't know how much we have, some extra money because of the way we changed our costing model. And the group decided what we're going to do with that money. And part of what we're going to do is just this. So the group's deciding that we're going to do more training and the expansion of services. And then we're going to work with our regional campuses and get them involved in the program and offer it up to them. So with that, that's the end of my presentation. But my whole team up here and I would be happy to take questions if you have any questions. Uh-huh. Were there any, I should be repeating your questions, were there any morale issues in our area, and how did we deal with that? Actually, we built up so much excitement for this program that we didn't really have morale issues for this. It's a time when we're going through the Fair Labor Standards Act, so we had some issues with morale for some other reasons, but not with this program. This was because our help desk is disassociated with our IT desktop support area. It didn't impact our help desk as much. And our technicians actually were just really excited to get a tool. They were really excited to be able to have the inventory and to be able to manage effectively. So actually from the centralized support area, they're very thrilled. They're very happy. Mm-hmm. We are now. We weren't before, and that was very problematic because we got into sponsored program funds and we got into all these things, and that was one of the reasons we changed the model. Just one. We have one enterprise SCCM administrator, and he works with the existing distributed IT because we didn't want to take anything away we wanted to improve the processes and save them time, but we didn't want to take over. Now, we do, is that, yes. Uh-huh. We do not. We have a place where people can come and do hands-on and touch the machines, look at different machines. So we have an offline shopping store, but we don't sell anything. But we're looking at changing that too. Have we limited the number of the selection? And the answer is yes, we have. We thought we were going to go with one, and we learned that it had to be two or three, but two or three was okay. That's been fine. Uh-huh. Good question. How does a department get involved, and is there initial fees attached? And the answer is anyone who wants to be involved can be involved. We've done a lot with the marketing. We've done a lot of presentations to make people aware of the program, and there is no fee other than the desktop. And once they become members of the program, then they have someone who sits on the technical steering committee. So they have rights to become a decision influencer in the project. Well, thank you all. Oh, we have one more question, and then we'll close. That's the last one. The question is, are we doing this with Vista? Are we using Vista? And the answer is, no, not yet.
Or never.
Oh, and I've heard my IT person say, or never. No. All right. Thank you all very much for coming.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Real Networks enables digital delivery of distance learning coursework, athletic events, and more to students anywhere. Information at realnetworks.com.